we are in Masechet Sanhedrin, Kaf Vav Amud Bet, towards the end of the page.
26b.
We're learning a few statements from Rav Nachman. The third one in the list is told us what we're talking about. Let's get back our heads back into the subject. We're talking about who's qualified to be a judge, who's qualified to be a witness in a court case, and those that are disqualified. Right? We know that deraita, according to Torah law, theft disqualifies a person from being a witness or a judge. Breaking other Torah laws is a machloket. But theft, everyone agrees, if you're guilty of theft, deraita, gezel, you are forbidden from being a judge or witness. And the rabbis added on additional categories. The original set were those which were similar to theft in one way or another. And now we're looking at some other ones. So the first one we looked at was someone who takes money from non-Jews, and whether that was a chilul Hashem, that he was not appropriate to be a judge or a witness. Second one was whether or not someone who's suspected of the avera, the sin of improper relations, illicit relations with someone who he shouldn't be with. And the third one now is someone who's guilty of a different type of theft, or theft, but perhaps a theft that we can excuse. So what is it? Amar Rav Nachman, Ganav Nisan and Ganav Tishrei. So we saw this last week, a Ganav Nisan and a Ganav Nisan thief and a Tishrei thief. Loshmei Ganav. We don't call them thieves, meaning we don't disqualify them. Rav Nachman's opinion. We don't disqualify someone. Who are we talking about? So the Gemara says it's not anyone who just steals something during that period of time. Hanei Mile, these words, we're talking about an Arisa. An Arisa, we said, is a sharecropper. A sharecropper is someone who leases the land. It's not his land. It belongs to someone else. And he says to the landowner, let me borrow your land. Let me rent your land. Or it could be for a year, it could be 5 years, however long it's going to be. And in return, I will pay you not a fixed amount. I will pay you by reference to the amount of produce that I managed to grow on your land. I'll give you a third, I'll give you a half, depending what they agree. Okay? So we're talking about sharecropper. So a sharecropper who steals produce in Nisan or Tishri. We learn that why Nisan and Tishri, because that's the time of the grain harvest in Nisan and the grape harvest in Tishri. During those times, people are gathering in the produce from the land. What does it mean he steals? A sharecropper, it's his land. It's his. He's rented it out. It's his produce. How can he steal from himself? So the answer is he's stealing from the third that he promised to the... He's giving him less. Right? That's my produce. I planted it. I'm harvesting it. What do you mean I'm stealing it? So the stealing is that instead of giving the third he promised, he gives a bit less. Why? Well, she says because it was a lot of work involved. And he rationalized to himself that he won't mind, or he'll understand that I had to do more work than originally thought. There's a lot more going on. Hard to get workers these days. But I know, whatever it is. And that's why he took the extra amount. Now, because he did it in those circumstances, we don't consider him to be a thief. It's not nice, and it's not right, but we don't lump him in the category of theft that would disqualify him from being a judge. Right? It's not considered to be financial gain. He did it because he rationalized that it was okay to do. And also, not only is he a sharecropper, but also the Gemara qualifies the devama or muat. It's a small amount. I'm not talking about a large amount. If instead of giving him a half, he only gave him a quarter or third, right? A significant amount he took, then then he's still considered to be a theft. As a thief, he took a large amount. So if he took a small amount, so that's what he rationalized away, that he was allowed to do that. Udavar shenigmara malachto. And the third qualification is that something that's finished its work, what does it mean? It means that it's fully grown. Fully grown fruit. You're allowed to take, he's allowed, we're talking about a person who's a sharecropper who took a little and it was fully grown, right? Three conditions. The sharecropper took a little bit, not a lot, and it was fully grown. Why does it matter that it was fully grown? Because workers in the field are allowed to take fully grown produce as a snack while they're working. So because the sharecropper knows that, so he rationally, even though he knows he's not in that category, I'm not a worker, it's my food, right? He rationalizes that just like a landowner doesn't mind when his workers take an apple off the tree to eat while they're working, so too, it's basically the same thing, right? I'm just taking a little bit more, right? He's rationalizing it away. It's not really theft. He's not trying to, apparently, he's not got the mindset of a thief. He rationalizes it something small. He won't mind. He's not going to be so bothered. And that's why we don't disqualify him from being a judge. He still has to pay it back. If he's caught, he's still against the law. He's still taking someone else's property. Can take him to Beit Din, and every single apple he took, he has to pay for it. But it doesn't stop him from being witnessed in a court case. Tov. Gemara gives an example. Ikare derav zavid. Ikare, Rashi tells us, three lines from the bottom of Rashi, Ikar, lav hainu aris. They weren't an aris. Ve'eno holek bepeirot. And they didn't share the fruit. So an ikar is not an aris. An ikar is a worker. Right? So we're talking about a different category now. So there was a case of Rav Zevid who had these workers. They weren't sharecroppers. They weren't splitting the produce. Right? They were workers. What happened with them? Chad ganav, one of them stole, kaba de sa'arei upastalei. One stole a calf, an amount, however much a calf is, a basketful, of barley, pasle, and he disqualified him. The chad, and the other one, ganav kibura da'ahine, and the other one stole a cluster of dates, upasle, and he disqualified him too. So he had two workers. We had, probably had lots of workers, but two of the workers anyway. One stole a basket of barley, and one stole a basket of dates. Rav Zevid disqualified them. Why? Because they weren't sharecroppers, like Rashi told us, and therefore they couldn't have they couldn't have rationalized that it was okay to do that. They know that as a worker they're allowed to take a little bit. But a basketful is not a little bit. That's theft. They know as a worker you're allowed to take an apple, you're allowed to take a little bit home for lunch, whatever it is, but not a basketful. Right? So they didn't have an excuse. If they would have been a sharecropper, maybe they could have rationalized that it's a small amount relative to the whole field, a basketful, that's all. He could have rationalized it. So, next. Hanhu Kaborai de Kabor Nasha. The Yom Tov Rishon Shel Atzeret. There were Kaborai. What's a Kaborai? So Kaborai, Rashi says, Kovrei Metim. Someone who buries dead people, grave digger. A grave digger, that they Kabor Nasha, they buried a person. The Yom Tov Rishon Shel Atzeret, on the first day of Yom Tov, of Atzeret. What's Atzeret? Shavuot. On the first day of Yom Tov, we only have one day of Yom, one day Shavuot here, but we're in Bavel, where they had 2 days. But on the first day, right, why the first day? Because the first day is Deraita, the second day is Rabbinic, So there's an argument if you did it on the second day, you're allowed to anyway, because it's only rabbinic. But first day Deraita, for sure you're not allowed to malacha, you're not allowed to dig graves. Even on something important like digging a grave, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, we don't bury people, right? We don't body smukser, you're not allowed to dig a hole, lots of different problems. Right, so, okay, so what happened? Shamtinhu Rav Papa. Rav Papa excommunicated them. Excommunicated, it's a good question what exactly it means. We should learn that once. What exactly it means to be excommunicated.
Well, they banned them from the minyan.
So that has consequences. Right, so you're not allowed to be in the minyan, you're not allowed to get called up. But there's a high, but what... That's down in there, kind of like bits that we know. There's probably a lot more. I personally don't know anything about excommunication other than what we just said, right? But what status it has, what's the status of the person? He's. I don't know. It's an interest. I don't know. It's a good.
It's hard.
Huh?
It's hard.
Hard.
Because maybe you do it the first time, but so then you can make sure and they go for all the community and say yes, not allowed to pray in the minyan.
They don't do it anymore because people don't listen to them. In the old days, people used to listen to their rav. The rav says this guy's excommunicated, and he's excommunicated. That's it. The rav said. Now, try and excommunicate anyone. Just walk in and fine. You don't want me in this shul. I go to that one. Right? You walk into the next shul. They don't care. It's not my rav. It's right. It's a different rav. I know anything about you. You got excommunicated. Well, I know. Don't know how, why, not my problem. Fine, come. Right? We don't have that at the moment, but it's about to change when we get back to a system of orderly structure where people talk, then we can come back to things like excommunication. Whether necessary, they're for their own good, right? For the good of the nation, for the good of the people, show people that they're wrong.
But if they do tshuva,
yeah, they can come back. They can be unexcommunicated at any time. They were still doing it in they still do it now. There are people now who get excommunicated in Meir Shurim. They have communities, and you can get excommunicated out of the community. So the guy just walked. Goes, what? They do it now, but not often. So they do it now. So he goes and leaves. It's right. So you have to get fined. I can't dab it in this shul anymore.
What purpose?
The baby.
Who's the judge?
I don't know. So I really don't know.
It's like death penalty because it's very hard in Judaism to give death penalty because
now we can't.
So separation is like that. You know, this is how you interpret separation. So it's like excluding, like cutting.
But temporarily. Usually these are temporary things.
Yeah.
Until someone does teshuva. Right, I mean the original reformers, right, the Enlightenment, they all got excommunicated, right? They were given ban of cherem and whatever, and that was for life because they never did tshuva. So,
exactly.
But that was their choice.
Yes.
Sometimes you can see not from the Badat Siddhartha that somebody was called to the Beis Din and he didn't come or he didn't come, but he wasn't Mekayem that. So it's written there that Aziri, not Mekai, Moti.
Is
that Iskari? Yeah. It's written there, Kepeshem and Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. Lo Lishtatem Minyan.
So they do have that power. So I don't really know the laws of what they can do and whether that excommunication is like a limited form or it's the major excommunication we're talking about here. I don't know if there's like different levels or there's only one excommunication.
They don't have the power to. To throw him out from the country, they don't have any power about authorities. They can't.
But in terms of Judaism, in terms of the halacha, is the one? I don't know the answer. Is there only one type of excommunication, or is there like a lesser type? Like now they do a smaller type of excommunication, but actually the main excommunication.
I don't know what is the main.
I don't know. I'm just have a question. Is
I
there
think
only,
it's
is
about
there only one?
We need to ask.
They're not allowed to come to minyan. They're not got help for like the Pesach that all the kupot tzedakah for right. the shkunatiyot and things like that. Maybe his kids to the cheder not allowed
the kids to. Okay, top. So over here, what happened is, right, the grave digger that buried on Shavuot, they excommunicated him. They what?
I'm giving him dut.
No, Shmatinhu Rav Papa Upasilinhu Leidut. Sorry, they both. They excommunicated him and forbid him for giving testimony, which is interesting because obviously they're two different things. If they're excommunicated and they, it doesn't automatically even you can be excommunicated, but that you could still be give testimony apparently. So apparently there's also secondarily they also disqualified him. Okay.
Also interesting that you have the word kaba, you said it's a basket.
Kab. Yeah, kaba. Kaba is a kab. Not a basket. I said a basket full. So meaning a measurement, a kab.
So you have the kaba, and then you have the...
Right, kaba, right.
All these three words.
Yeah. All of these things are... Right?
Wasn't
you should know that, that the Gemara, when it speaks... We're speaking now about grave diggers and people being... But there's a lot more going on in the surface. You have to know the language they use and what they mean and what they're talking about. Oh, they're talking about many different things going on at the same time. So we've got a nice story now about grave diggers, but it's not the only thing that's going on here, right? So we're learning the very surface level of Gemara. Baruch Hashem, that we can even understand the surface level. Never mind anything deeper. So.
What I don't understand is...
Yeah.
Is if they dug the grave, does that mean they also put the body in the grave?
Yes, yeah. I assume, it doesn't really matter here. They still did, they whatever they did was breaking Yom Tov.
Because well, one day Yom Tov, all they had to do was wait a few hours.
Oh, and they won't, and they didn't. This is in the old days that when you, if you're in a public position, and you break halacha in public, you get excommunicated. You're not allowed to do that. So you were in your house, you put on the toilet switch light on, you broke Shabbos. No one's going to come around and excommunicate you. For a start, you did it by accident. Secondly, it wasn't in public. But if you're a public official, like a grave digger, you're representing the rabbinic authorities, can't go around breaking halacha in the public view. For that, you get excommunicated. Grave diggers also for sure know the rules. It's not like they made the mistake. Oh, really? Like, we're not meant to? Oh, is Yom Tov? Oh, nobody told me. Nobody taught me that rules. There's not many rules for a grave digger, right? So they know not Shabbos, not Yom Tov, everything, right?
Grave digger is a Chevra Kadisha guy?
Yeah. So, it's not like they made a mistake. If they made it, oh, well, I didn't know, sorry. So you don't get an excommunication for making a mistake.
Did they also do Chevra Kadisha?
Who?
The grave digger. Did they prepare the body?
I don't know. It's not relevant for the story. I don't know. You can surmise either way, whichever. But here, anyway, these grave diggers. So they were excommunicated and disqualified. Now, what happened? That's not the end of the story. That's what happened initially. Achshurinhu Rav Huna, Bered Rav Yeshua. Achshurinhu from the word kosher. Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yeshua, made them kosher. Right? He said. He declared otherwise, right? Rav Papa excommunicated them, and then Rav Huna reinstated them. Yeah, Yofi. So no, we don't excommunicate. I don't know in terms of what the statute was between Rav Huna and Rav Papa, and where how this one had the ability to do this, and the other one maybe they went to a different beit in a different town, and they said no, you're fine. I know whatever the system was, but that's what happened. Amale Rav Papa. Rav Papa then said to him, Rav Papa heard, wait a minute, Rav Huna, you've reinstated these guys and excommunicated, what's going on? Vaharashayim Ninhu. These are wicked people, right? People who break halacha in public. Rashayim. How can you reinstate them? What did Rav Huna reply to him? He said like this, Savri mitzvah ka'avdeh. They thought they were doing a mitzvah. You're right. They knew that we don't do this on Yom Tov. We don't dig graves. But, Rav Huna said, they thought they were doing a mitzvah. What does that mean? It means that they still did something wrong, but we... but they don't need to be excommunication is for when you did it kilu b'mezid, right? You're being punished, so to speak, right? Because you did something publicly against halacha deliberately. They weren't deliberate. You're right. They deliberately went against halacha, but they thought it was a mitzvah to do so. They weren't doing it because they were rebelling. We don't like this halacha. We don't care what the rabbis say. We don't care what the Torah says. We're just going to do it. Right? It wasn't from a point of view of a place of rebelling, of arguing. It was from a point of view, it was wrong, but it's not to be excommunicated for. Maybe you'll lose your job, right? If you're going to do that, I can't employ you as a grave digger. I'm very sorry. It's a consequence of breaking the law, breaking the rules. I'm not going to have you as a grave digger anymore, right? And there's still a consequence in Shemayim. They did an Aveira, and they need to do Tshuva. But there's no point being excommunication. Excommunication is for people who are wicked. People who are doing it because they are making a point. They're rebelling, they're ignoring, they're deliberately going against.
We don't
know the whole story. No, but Rav Huna is saying that they thought they were doing a mitzvah.
To bury someone, people want to attend.
Which is
the
a
burial.
Mitzvah. Yeah. Yeah, but we don't do it.
That's what
the people.
Case.
No, we're talking about the mitzvah of burying the dead. Someone dies, then it, as we know, it's a mitzvah to do it as quick as possible. It's kavod for the body that it doesn't get left around. Right? You should always try and do it the same day. Don't we make a big effort to bury them the same day? We don't want to leave them overnight. It's not kavod. Right? So here, that someone died Yom Tov morning, or maybe in the evening of Yom Tov. They didn't want to leave it for, maybe it was in the summer. They didn't want to leave it for a whole day. It's not kavod. So they say, you know what? Let's bury him anyway. You're right, it's probably not right, but maybe we can get told it's a better thing to do. Whatever the rationalization was, it was still wrong, but they're not wicked. They're not guilty of being someone who should be excommunicated.
But why did they ask someone?
Don't know. Here we're learning an event in order to teach us. If they asked people and it was all sorted, then we wouldn't have much of a book. Because most of this is like people doing things right. Here's what's happened. And, well, people mess up. And Hashem helps us mess up as well in order that we can learn. Right? Gemara says a person can't fulfill a mitzvah until he first stumbles in that mitzvah. Right? A person who does something by rote and never makes a mistake, he hasn't acquired that mitzvah. It's not that you need to do it wrong. Realize it's wrong, understand it's wrong, and from a place of wrong, do it right. From a place of darkness, you can then have light. If it's only light from day one, right? If you're only born into the Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, from day one, you never sinned. So, it doesn't mean anything. Good is meaningless if there's nothing else to compare it to. You have to see what you compare it to. So a person has to stumble in a mitzvah, has to not get up in the morning for Shacharit, and then feel really bad about not davening, and then never want to do that again. I actually want to daven Shacharit every morning, Baruch Hashem. So, but if I just daven Shacharit every morning since I was two, my dad taught me to, I've never missed one. So, I've no real understanding about what it means to daven Shacharit. I need to not miss it. Not deliberately, obviously, but Hashem is going to engineer circumstances so that I'm going to mess up in order that I can then do it properly.
Why don't we say, we told this story about the guy when he made a mitzvah? Yes, he won't make a mitzvah, but he failed. His intention make a mitzvah.
If his intention to do it, then he still gets the credit with it. He gets both, right? The person who wants to get up for Shacharit, and he intends to get up, and for whatever reason, he oversleeps, his alarm clock didn't work. So he didn't do it deliberately. He wakes up and it's 10 o'clock and Shacharit's already finished.
Rashi in this case said it deliberately.
Who?
Rashi.
Who did it deliberately?
They
did. Deliberately because they thought it, they reasoned that it was better.
It says what no? Rashi said it was for the money.
Where? Safra, which one?
Kavrai.
kavareh meitim.
Shalino leidot.
The mishum sacha mamon. You're right. Sorry. Thank you very much. Babu lahu kirasha. But that, which is interesting, but that's Rashi saying that, which we don't have here, but he's assuming that's the reason why they would have excommunicated, because they wouldn't have excommunicated him for another reason. But then, that's Rav Papa's, if you like, that's Rav Papa's Savra. But then Rav Huna explicitly in the text of the Gemara says, Savrei mitzvah, they thought they were doing a mitzvah. So what does it mean? Meaning that they, this Rashi, is the actual reason, or it's Rav Papa's understanding of what was going on? You with me? The difference? Is that what Rav Papa thought? Or is that what was actually going on? It's not clear. Because how can Rav Huna come along then and... But it didn't, I mean, Rav Huna can have a different opinion. He wasn't there. He doesn't know them. Doesn't know what they did and why they did it. But why would he think differently than Rav Papa as to the intention?
There are two footnotes here, 48 and 49, which get very confusing.
Yeah, but we haven't got to 48, 49, not yet. They're coming, not yet. Yeah, but he would. But also making the money tough, so they were gonna get. They weren't gonna make. It doesn't really make. I can't go against Rashi, but it doesn't make sense so much that they were, because they're gonna get the money the next day. You know, can't get paid on Shabbos anyway. So what are you waiting for? You're gonna get paid on the next day anyway.
Yeah, but professionally, it's not for mitzvah.
No, but how does it help if I bury him on Yom Tov Rishon instead of burying him on Yom Tov Sheni? So what have I said? I can't get the money. No one's going to give me money on Yom Tov anyway. I know. That's why it's not so clear. The why Tov?
That's
after Rav Yeshua. Yeah, no. Well, that's the next line in the Gemara. So let's finish this little bit. Okay, there's two lines left on this, sugya, two bits left. So, okay, so first of all, so we just saw that Rav Huna reinstated them because he said, he thought, which doesn't mean that it's true, right? Savrei is a reasoning. He reasoned, not that he asked them and they testified before him and we were actually doing this, right? Savrei, he reasoned that they were doing it for a mitzvah. Right? So he doesn't know, he just reasoned that way.
The person who has paid the guy he made to hold.
Yeah.
So when he paid him, he made a...
We don't know he paid him.
Yeah, so when he not paid, so it's not a mitzvah.
Oh, I see. Tom. Okay. Right. Okay. So that's a question. Okay. But haka, so then the Gemara says, wait a minute. Vahaka mashtin alhu, but we excommunicated them. Rashi says, Al Harishana. This goes on the first. Chozrin of Rin Bashonin Ba'aveira. Ah, so according to this, according to the explanation, is that they were excommunicated on the first time, but they went and they did it several times later. How Rashi knows that is not so clear, right? Rashi has a very deep understanding about what's going on here, and Rashi's also talking on different levels, right? We've got the story going on, like we said, but we've got other stuff going on, which is why Rashi knows to give explanations that fit on different levels as well. So they don't necessarily fit with the story, but as clearly, it might be, but we don't know why. But in terms of the whatever else the Gemara is teaching us, they also fit. But here, let's stick with what we're trying to understand.
I'm getting something different on the footnote.
So the footnote gives an alternative to Rashi, because Rashi is quite difficult. So the footnote here, Osgold brings alternative commentators. He brings the Nemuke Yosef, or Rabbi Yonatan, I don't know who Rabbi Yonatan is, who explain that the grave diggers did not continue. They don't agree with Rashi. However, they didn't ask to be reinstated. See, there's a question here. Why does the Gemara say, yeah, but wait a minute, we excommunicated them, right? We know that, right? We just said Rab Papa excommunicated them. Rab Huna says, I'm reinstating them because I think they were doing a mitzvah. And the Gemara comes along and says, yeah, but we excommunicated them. What does that mean? So, Tov, you could say it's just going back to Rav Huna. Rav Papa said, look, we excommunicated them, how can you undo that? But it's a bit simple. Right? The Gemara knows they just got excommunicated. You don't say something that's obvious. We excommunicated you, you changed it. Yeah, but we excommunicated you. So the commentators are trying to find, well, what does it mean? Why are you telling me something so obviously that you've already known? So the other way of looking at that is, according to this Nebuchadnezzar Yosef, that if they thought they were doing a mitzvah, either, I'm reading extra now, either why did I wouldn't have excommunicated them if I would have thought that, meaning they could have told me they were doing a mitzvah and I would have, or they didn't try to get themselves reinstated. That's Nebuchadnezzar Yosef. Well, that's also difficult because now they are getting reinstated by Rav Huna. So presumably they went to Rav Huna to get reinstated. So that's exactly what they were trying to do. So we have lots of questions. It's not a problem. Okay, let's finish this bit. Savrei kapara kaf avdeilan rabbanan. So then we've got the last sentence, which then gives some clarity to what the explanations were. So the last sentence says, Savrei, they thought, the grave diggers thought, that it was a kapara that the Rabbanan gave to them. Right? They didn't argue. So according to the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef, he goes by this last sentence. And the last sentence then sheds light on what we're talking about. Right? The last sentence says, yeah, but the grave diggers reasoned that they were getting a kapara, an atonement, from the fact that they got excommunicated. So Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says, we see from here that they didn't go and get themselves reinstated. And that was his explanation of what the story was about. So let's review. What happened? Grave diggers bury someone on the first day of Yom Tov. Rav Papa excommunicates them. Rav Huna says, no, maybe they thought they were doing a mitzvah. But wait a minute, we excommunicated them. Whatever that means. Answer, the answer was because they thought it was it was a kapara. You could say it the other way. The rabbis, even though the rabbis knew that they were doing it for a mitzvah, the rabbis still excommunicated them in order to give them a kapara for doing something they shouldn't have done. You're right, you thought you were doing a mitzvah. You shouldn't have done it. In order that I can give you a kapara, I'm going to excommunicate you now for the next month, and that will clean your slate. Right? That will be a kapara for you. I'm doing it. Trust me. And Rav Huna came along and said, you know what? You don't even need to do that. They didn't need the kapara. Why? Because they thought they were doing a mitzvah. There's nothing to give kapara for. Kapara comes on if you do something wicked, you're rebelling, you need to get a... And now you've got a kapara, right? You're right. It makes you help you do teshuva, whatever your spara is on the kapara, right? But Rav Huna held, you didn't need that. They thought they were doing a mitzvah. And Rav Papa holds, even if we still excommunicated them for a good reason. What was that good reason? Good reason was it was a kapara. Yeah? So, 5 minutes. Let's have a look. Tov. Alright, we can start this bit, but it's quite chunky. Tov. Itmar. It was said. Hold on, let's just see the Rashi at the end of this page. Before we get to that, maybe we'll just finish with the Rashi. Savre. They thought, Hai Deshmatinin, this fact that we excommunicated them. Mishum kaparahu, it was on account of a kapara. Al sha'avarnu, on the fact that we made a sin. So he's going on savrei, they thought, meaning the grave diggers thought, not that the judges thought. V'lo mishum dine hedal bin. Ella muta. The chalal yon top is fila mitzvah. Lo mishum dina hadav. Not because they weren't sure, I think, whether or not it was permitted to bury a person on the first day of Yom Tov on account of a mitzvah. When they shed v'nadui, and they stayed in their excommunication, mishum kapara, on account of kapara. Okay, so you know what? Let's stop there. Not 2 minutes left, so not enter the new sugya. We'll say that for tomorrow.